Chapter 11. Perry to the rescue. What do you get when you cross the word Perry with the word terrorize? You get the word court admin used, which was terrorize. Perry was drunk on his own power, and what's power if you don't use it? It would be like being marooned on a deserted island with a few million bucks in a suitcase. That ain't cool. Court admin felt that Perry went home every day and spent the rest of his evening planning on whose life he was going to fuck with the next day. It might be a judge who was in his crosshairs, or a court admin employee that he didn't like. I mean, if that isn't a full-fledged psychopath, then I don't know what is. He would actually play it out in his head, who his target was, how he would do it, what he would say, and how he would respond to his victim's potential reactions. It was a sick fucking game that gave him great enjoyment. What do you call a person who receives pleasure from another's pain? I don't know the medical word for it, but most would simply call him a fucking asshole. Perry did this thing where he would walk up to you and say something like,
"I heard you've been getting to work late."
Or maybe,
"I heard you guys are having some problems in your department."
For a normal person, you might consider this friendly banter, you know, joking around. Perry was not normal, and he did it to flex his power and get a reaction. It did it to make you uncomfortable, maybe overreact, and possibly provide Perry with inflammatory information he could use in the future. When it came to me, this is one of the outrageous statements Perry made, trying to get a reaction. He walked up behind me in the parking lot.
"Hey, Brett, did you know that I had a camera placed in your office that points at your desk?"
I responded calmly, "No, you didn't." Perry, looking perplexed and a little pissed off that I didn't freak out, asked,
"How do you know?"
I said confidently, "Because you would have fired me months ago." I then turned and walked away, but that's the way Perry operated. Never. "Hey, you're doing a great job." No, not Perry. If he wasn't making you nervous or uncomfortable, then he wasn't happy. I was watching the news and heard a funny turn on a common saying that is so Perry apropos. You either love him or he hates you. In order to play the game, Perry to the rescue, here are the rules. Perry would recognize a major problem, then Perry, and only Perry, would come to the rescue and solve it. This game gave the judges the impression that our court couldn't run without him. Without Perry, his followers felt as if walls would come crashing in, and the circuit and our court would be decimated. The truth of the matter was, the court was running great in spite of Perry. At every turn, he would throw down roadblocks in front of projects that only he could solve because he made the roadblock. Perry never had an independent thought that wasn't designed to take someone down, remove someone from their position, demean a particular individual, or garner more power. Perry had those he pretended to like, and those he outright hated, and he sure the hell let you know which one you were. Of course, since I was the boss of his girlfriend, Jezebel, he and Munyon really hated me. What must have been really frustrating for Perry was in order to fire me, he had to have the court administrator fire me. And my court administrator let Perry know, in some subtle manner, that he would quit if Perry made him fire me. That was pretty nice of my court administrator, and he kept that promise, only to allow Munyon, of all people, to fire me years later. And after all the years of knowing me, my court administrator believed for some stupid reason I would let Munyon firing me go unchallenged. As if I wouldn't write a book or something. My court administrator had been beaten down over the years, so his brain had probably turned to mush. Perry was such a fucking nightmare to work for that I don't believe the man got a free weekend in 20 years, because he was continually putting out Perry's fires. Between all Perry's female court administration problems and Perry's general terrorizing of court admin, every day was a game of keeping your job while in the background. Perry tried everything in his power to undermine your position. It was a game of Perry whack-a-mole because a bored Judge Perry meant that Perry-created chaos was just around the corner. At least for us little people, Perry's wrath wasn't always directed at court administration staff. Perry also terrorized the judiciary. In court administration, we referred to this as Perry to the rescue. Perry was always taking credit for putting out fires. The catch was that Perry would create the fire and then pretend he was the only one to put it out. And without his quick and decisive intervention, the entire court would blow up. Let's take a look at Perry to the rescue, A technique of blackmail that kept his immense butt in the chief's wide chair for 2 decades. First, he would have Jezebel watch the judge's computer screens from her home office and provide Perry with some dirt on a judge. By this time, Jezebel wasn't even required to come to work. She just collected her check and remotely spied on everyone in court. Some of my MIS staff were so freaked out that Jezebel was watching their computers that they began to use a Linux-based operating system called Ubuntu. They realized that Jezebel wouldn't be able to figure out how to monitor their PCs using Ubuntu. For the rest, maybe she might catch a judge texting a female that was not his wife. Maybe he was using his computer to do personal banking. Maybe he was working from home and not showing up in the office regularly. Maybe he was watching some porn in his chambers. It really didn't matter which of these situations took place, because Perry would handle all of them in roughly the same manner. Once Jezebel had delivered the dirt to Perry, he would make an unscheduled visit to the judge's office, and this would have been the typical conversation. Perry closes the judge's chamber door, sits across from his target, and says,
"Hi, Ted,"
or whatever the judge's first name was. He would never refer to the judge as Judge Jones, because using the judge's first name implied privilege and power. Perry would continue,
"How have you been doing? I don't see you around here very much."
Ted says, "Working hard. I have a big docket, and no matter how much I hack away at it, it just keeps getting bigger." Perry would then smile understandingly, his little smarmy smile as if he's Ted's best buddy, and then say,
"Well, a little bird told me that the press has dug up some emails that you've been sending to your girlfriend."
At that exact moment, Ted would fully realize that Perry owned him. Perry would then continue,
"The bad news is, I think they're going to run a story on it."
Squirming in his chair, Ted asks, "Is there any good news?" Perry then smiles, chuckles, and says,
"Yes, I'm on pretty good terms with this news outlet, and I think I can quash the story."
"You would do that for me?" Ted asks nervously.
"I think I can put that baby to bed. But if I don't win the next election for chief judge, if this thing circles back around on us, then I can't help you anymore. I'll no longer be the chief judge."
"Well, you would certainly have my vote," Ted tells Perry.
"Good. Then let me get moving so I can stop this story from ever becoming public. As long as I am in a position to protect your reputation, then I'll do my best."
Perry would then try to get up out of his chair, eventually does, and would exit the judge's chamber, having acquired yet another continual vote. But here's the funny thing. There was never any story because there was never any press. Other than the fact that Ted was emailing his girlfriend, Perry made everything else up. This was a classic Perry to the rescue scenario. This worked so well for him that he was able to kowtow judges for 20 years to continue to vote for him. Some would consider this blackmail, but to crazy-ass Perry, this was the price of remaining in power. So that was one scenario. Another was if you happened to be a judge that couldn't be persuaded, Perry would actually call the press himself and report a judge doing something nefarious, whether it was true or not. Then when the press contacted his target judge for comment, the judge would realize this was real, and he would have to tuck his tail between his legs and walk up to Perry's office and lay down his sword at the king's feet. Else, Perry would come a-calling. But this Perry to the rescue thing didn't stop there. Just to fuck with court administration, Perry would call the press and tell them that during the last court inventory, court administration couldn't find many county assets. Not accounting for all the court's assets is typical, because no one is perfect, and there were 5 courthouses and hundreds of offices, computer rooms, courtrooms, cubes, and comm closets to be searched. It was human nature that some items would either not be found or entered into the inventory under a different serial number, or simply not be entered at all, even though they had been found. Therefore, after each inventory process, there were always missing items. Perry knew this, but it was something in black and white, and Perry saw it as a flammable issue that he could light on fire. He would then summon me up to his office and tell me that he wanted me to repeat the entire inventory the county had just completed. This had taken the county like 3 weeks to complete with several people on the project. Now Perry expected me to duplicate that inventory, and he would always remind me that he expected everything to be found. If I couldn't keep track of computer inventory, then he would find someone who could. I would then take the computer inventory, look it over, and discover that the majority of the missing items had been assigned to judges. They had taken stuff home and had never brought it back to be inventoried. I wrote Judge Perry this finding, and it was music to his ears. He completely forgot about me and was able to turn this against judges. During the next mandatory judges meeting, Perry reported to the judges that the press is all jacked up over all this missing computer equipment. And Brett Arquette, the court's CTO, this was like the only time he ever brought me up in front of judges, had told Perry that the judges had taken the gear. This did two wonderful things for Perry. It further intimidated judges who were not already in Perry's camp, and it also made me out to be a no-good ratfink who had presumably told the press of the missing equipment. Each time Perry did this to me, he was looking to add nails to my coffin and eventually get rid of me and make Jezebel our circuit's new CTO. Once the gravity of the missing equipment that the judges had taken home had sunk in, Perry would then offer up something like,
"However, I know this news outlet very well and will make sure I quash the story."
Boom! Right there, he had more followers and he had found them by my own inventory list of what was missing and who it was assigned to. Without exception, I was told by those in the judicial meetings that Perry to the rescue made judges understand how important it was for Perry to keep a tight rein on the bumbling, stumbling fools that ran court administration. I can't recall all the Perry to the rescue scenarios because there were so many of them. Perry would get bored with his normal version. He would go home that night and come up with another derivation of the same tactic that he could enjoy. For example, Perry didn't think that Orange County was giving us enough money in our budget. So what did Perry do? He set up a meeting with the Orange County administrators and told them that if they didn't give us twice the amount of money in our budget, then he would instruct his judges to sentence people to 364 days in jail, rather than 365. You're probably wondering why this would make a difference. Well, if convicted defendants were sentenced to do less than a year, then they would serve their sentence in the Orange County Jail. Longer than a year, they would serve their time in the Florida State Prison System. Even a stupid person could look over the Orange County budget and determine that the corrections department dwarfed the budgets of every other department, including the sheriff's office. Already overcrowded and with the understanding that Perry's threat would cost the county $20,000 per year to house a single extra inmate, the increase in inmates would cost Orange County millions. Hell, they might have to build a larger jail, which would cost hundreds of millions. Of course, looking at the prospect of doubling their inmates at the jail, the county believed Perry would follow through with his blackmail and they quickly capitulated. During the next judge meeting, Perry told his brethren that he had doubled the court's budget. Perry had discovered the ultimate county blackmail scheme. From that time on, our court had the largest county budget per capita in Florida. So that's how Perry stayed in power for so long. Blackmail, 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 then Perry to the rescue. If you were to compare it to any other type of crime, it would be a firebug who lights a fire and just happens to the fire chief and is always the first on the scene to put it out. Or in the medical field, this would be a nurse who injects something special into the IV line of a patient and is there just in time to call the code and save a life. Anyway, you cut it, this is a pathological method of acquiring recognition and regaining power. On his own, Perry had a lot of maniacal tools at his disposal to stay in power. However, without Jezebel electronically spying on judges and providing that information to Perry, he would have never gained a fraction of the power he had near the end. Near the end. Damn, I love the sound of those words, unless they are connected to me.